Hey, cool backpack!
What?
I said cool pack. I like the panda print.
Oh, thanks. It's a Vibration hydration pack.
Vibration?
Yeah, it comes with a water pouch that holds 2 liters, so I can dance, stay hydrated, and avoid waiting in line all day to fill a water bottle.
Oh, no way. I get it now. Vibes and hydration. Vibration.
They have tons of cool designs on their website. Check them out at Vibration.com. V-I-B-E-D-R-A-T-I-O-N.com. Life's a party. Stay hydrated. Woo!
Use code Coachella to save on your next purchase.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the sky.
Welcome to Ignite Your Luminescent Life, Intuitive Business Mastery and SaaS with me, your host, Dr. Elena Espinal. I'm a high-performance psychologist and intuitive business mentor who empowers heart-centered entrepreneurs to express their divine calling through profitable and transformational businesses. And I'm super, super excited to be here with you and to have our fabulous guest today. Her name is Dana Sarcone, and she is actually known as the Liberating Leadership Coach, which we will find more about this. I think that this is like so fascinating. She is so passionate about helping her clients live an all-in and full-out life to really step into their power and to really enjoy the success that they deserve to have in their life and in their business. And she had a pretty successful corporate career. I think it was like 24 years or something like that. And then she decided to earn her master's degree in counseling and then become a national certified counselor, a core energetics practitioner, and then a certified life coach. So she is somebody that has like so much wisdom and so much life experience, which I'm just so excited to have her here. She is also the founder of Source Your Joy and Liberating Leadership Solutions, and she is the host of the Your Shift Matters podcast. So I'm super, super excited to have you here, Dana. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Boy, I hear you go through all that. I think, boy, I've been really, really busy. Overwhelmed with listening to it.
Well, sometimes when I hear my intros, I'm like, oh, boy, I'm old.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, I'm old because you can't do all those things with like, you know, too few.
Not a lot of notches in your belt, right?
With too few years, right?
So, oh, yeah.
So anyhow, just a few housekeeping items. Those of you that might be listening in, if you decide that you have some questions for Dana and want to call in later and ask her, the number to call is going to be 646-716-7979, 646-716-7979. And then those of you that are listening that actually would want to get a hold of our video and get to see us live and in person interacting as we're going through this interview, you can sign up for that at intuitivebusinessmastery.com/radio. So one of the things that I like to do, Dana, when I first have my guests is kind of get a little bit of a sense of like who you are and, you know, like why, how did you get to be who you are and do what you do and, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe we can start there. Like what inspired you to, because there was a shift here. So I'd love to hear about that.
Yes, your shift matters.
That's
right.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you know, kind of the cliff note version here, I took the traditional route of going to college and getting my business degree. And then I started out with DuPont right out of college. And I was with them for, gosh, well over 24 years. And I was very fortunate. It was a great company to work for. They had a very respectful environment. Loved, they were very good with women. So much so that I was able to climb the senior leadership roles along the way. And I was very successful in the corporate world. But the reality was inside, in my heart, I just wasn't fulfilled. I was fortunate to work with so many people, and I just knew it really wasn't what I was meant to be doing. So I was very fortunate at one point when I decided, you know, I think I want to go back and become a psychologist or a therapist or something. And I decided I want to go back and get my master's. And I had a fantastic boss at the time with DuPont, and I went to him and I said, so here's one thing about doing. What do you think? And he said, well, if you don't get your master's in psychotherapy, you actually be good at building teams and handling workplace conflict. Okay, so DuPont picked up my bill. They paid for my master's, which bless their hearts.
That's pretty awesome. That's a brilliant thing. You know, I want to say, I know that it might not seem like a big deal for you, but I just kind of want to highlight that for our listeners, because I know that there's probably people that are in jobs where they're feeling like, this is fine, but it's not really what I want to do. And maybe I want to do this other thing. And they're trying to figure out how to make that transition. And like, this is like such a brilliant strategy. I love that.
I really thought I had everything to gain, nothing to lose. I might as well ask, right? And so I was very pleased. They paid for my whole master's. And at the same time I was getting my master's, this is pre-kids, of course, but at the same time I got my master's, I was going through a four-year program in New York City at the Institute of Orangetics, specializing in corn orangetics. And I did all that work as a therapist in the evenings and working for DuPont and during the day. Actually, in the middle of that, I was a fitness instructor at lunch, so it's kind of crazy. And then, and then eventually, I had kids. I had my first baby and my beautiful daughter, and I wound up having to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do what I loved, so they would follow. I followed the money. I decided that it was going to be a lot easier raising a child, working under the security of a corporate, corporate blanket. And I stayed with the corporate world for a long time. And eventually we moved here to the Cleveland area, which is where we are now. And I wound up working with another company. And I'll be honest, it just sucked the life out of me. It was a very different company than DuPont was, very dysfunctional. It was a really tough, tough work environment, very debilitating. And it got to the point where I just wound up finding myself very depressed, just sorely depressed. And I hit my rock bottom during that time, and I really had to do some soul searching about, is this money worth my sanity?
And I really love what you said about there's just so much wisdom in just a little bit that you're sharing here, is that you said, I didn't do what I love, and in some ways you had good reasons. And I think that that's kind of what happens for all of us, right? Like, there's different times in our lives when we seek certain things, and then we have to make these decisions of like, okay, what feels most important? And that, in some ways you had a sense of what it is that you wanted to do, and that you felt like, okay, I needed to take a more rational approach. And then you said, and then I got depressed. And I know that we're going to talk a ton about this, but I have this theory that people get depressed when they're not really doing what they're here to do. Like, I have this theory that when you're not really like in line with your gifts and the things that bring you joy, that that's like the best invitation for depression. And
Absolutely. And it was certainly, I was no exception to that. I mean, being in a place where I was, I woke up okay. And then on my drive to work, I could just feel myself contracting and just the resistance of not wanting to be there. And then I would push through the day and, hold my head up high, pull up my bootstraps, put my nose to the grindstone and get what I needed to get done. And then I would leave and I would come home and I would just feel depleted and sad, because it wasn't, you're doing something all day long, spending all that time with so many people and so many hours of your day, doing something that just didn't light the fire in my belly. It didn't make me excited. I wasn't passionate about what I was doing. And so it just got harder and harder as the days passed and as the months passed, living a life that I knew I wasn't meant to live. It was so incongruent with who I was.
Wow. And so I'm kind of curious as to this is kind of like the rock bottom of like, wow, like I'm feeling really depressed and now I have a kid. And
well, rock bottom is I suffered for years. And this is the same thing. In the corporate world, they say some of your very strong strengths can also be your derailer. For me, I'm a fighter. I don't give up. And so my strength is that I don't give up, but my weakness in this part, the derailer, was I was in working for a company I didn't really enjoy. I didn't fit in their environment very well. I'm not following my passion, but I stayed with it, you know, for the wrong reasons, the paycheck, family stability, and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And over the years, it just, like, chiseled away at my self-esteem, my sense of self-worth. And eventually, one night, literally middle of the night, about 2:30, I just woke up just this horrible, horrible heaviness and sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up on the bathroom floor at 2:30 in the morning with earbuds in my ear, and I was listening to Whitney Houston, one of my favorite artists, singing a song, I Look to You. And in that song, there's a phrase, there's a couple of phrases where she talks about, I've done all I can do here, I don't know what else to do, so I'm looking to you. I was interpreting that at the time. I remember that morning, I cried for hours, listening to that song over and over again, and all I could say to God was, I'm ready when you are.
Wow.
Ready to take me, take me. I will not decide that it's not in my bank. I'm not going to fight if you decide that it's time to bring me home.
Wow.
You know? It was a tough time. Very tough time.
Totally. Totally. I'm noticing just like the connection being a little wavy. So I'm going to like just interrupt for a second so maybe they can, so we can catch up because it sounds like this is like super, what you're sharing is like super deep and so, so meaningful about, you know, getting to that place of maybe even considering like, okay, like, do I want to stay around?
Actually, in that moment, in a rock spot a moment, it was, do I want to stay around? I was sure I didn't. I was sure that I was, you know, I didn't matter. I'm not good enough. I mean, all this stuff that I didn't really realize at the time that they were wrapped up of who I was and the way I saw myself. And in my mind. Right? And so I was done. I was like, what point? What am I even doing here? You know, so I had made up my mind. I'm ready when you are. Bring me home. Bring me home. And I will watch over my kids from there where I will be happier and I can still protect them.
Wow. So what kept you, what kept you from doing it at that moment?
Well, you know, like I said, I wasn't suicidal in that I wasn't even fantasizing about suicide. Mm-hmm. That was never an option, but it was a surrender to God saying, I'm ready.
Okay.
And I honestly think doing that surrender, I think there was a part where God swooped up and said, I've got you. And this is not you. This is not who you are. And I'm getting chills even just saying that. There was something, even as soon as the next day,
right.
And I'm kidding. I was 3 hours of just bawling. My heart was breaking into a billion pieces. It was the most pain I've ever felt. And the next day, I think I had a recovery day, if you will. I think the following day I went, this is not me. This is not who I am. And this is not the way I can't live like this anymore. I can't live like this. Mm-hmm. And so there was a divine intervention or something where I just had this knowingness. Hold the door here, like, you know, hold the front door. What is going on? This is not me. And that just kind of said, whoa, I need to make some changes here because, you know, hopefully that was my rock bottom and I didn't get any further down, you know.
Right.
And knowing that there's only one direction to go and that was up. And I needed to really take a hard look at myself and make some pretty drastic changes.
And, I mean, I just... I'm so grateful for you sharing your story and your vulnerability around this because I think that it's kind of a taboo thing, you know, where many people actually may have experienced those types of feelings and thoughts, but nobody ever like wants to admit or talk about it, right? Because it's kind of like this thing that like, you know, and I mean, I know I shared with you about how after I got injured, you know, it was kind of like, okay, like everything I've worked for has been taken away. So like, I'm done, you know? And so kind of, but I think that that's also a really important recognition of, I believe that our lives are precious because we get to touch those edges, right? Like in some ways, like the greatest gift that death gives us is life. And so when you sort of start putting them in a balance, right, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, whoa, okay, so what's the gift here? And then what do I need to do?
Right. And, you know, honestly, it's interesting. I can, when you're talking about people, it's taboo if you don't talk about that. I've learned that we hold ourselves to high standards.
Yeah.
Right. And we have this feeling that people like me don't get depressed.
Right.
People like me don't get abused. People like me don't turn to alcohol. People like me are strong enough. I shouldn't be in this position in the first place.
Right.
That's so horrible, because think about the trap that we put ourselves in by thinking that way.
Totally.
And then what's worse is that because people like me don't get depressed, do you think that I ever put that out to anybody that I was feeling the way I was? I kept it as my safely guarded secret. And what happens? It starts to have so much power over you, because by keeping it a secret, why do we keep things a secret? We keep things a secret because there's shame attached to it. Ashamed that I wasn't as strong as I let everybody think I was, and then I let myself down, and that shame wound up being the shackle that just kept me bound and made me my depression get worse and worse, and I never got the help I needed. But once you tell that secret and you acknowledge it, it's amazing how the shame melts away, and now the power that had over me disappeared. I will tell everybody that story now because I'm no longer ashamed.
Right.
And then I also realized that when you do tell that story, people do say, oh my God, I felt that way too. And you don't feel so alone. You realize we're simply human. We all go through those kinds of things.
Totally. Totally. And I love what you're saying about the shame and how shame keeps you trapped, and it's a shackle, and I mean, and we're talking right now for you, just kind of getting to that rock bottom of feeling really depressed. But I think that it shows up in so many different ways, even with as simple as not actually knowing stuff. You know, like I see it with many of my clients where like are entrepreneurs and they don't know how to do stuff, but they were ashamed to like reach out and get help because they didn't know how to do something, you know, or they didn't know. And it was like, oh my gosh, like how many beliefs and stories are we like carrying that are keeping us from actually accessing the resources, the support, the community to actually help us do better and perform better and be happier and healthier, et cetera.
Right. Well, you know what I would also argue is, and listening to you talk about this, I think the flip side of the coin to shame is pride.
Yes.
Because, right, it's like, because I'm so proud of how strong I am, I now feel ashamed because I'm not strong. Or, you know, so to your point around the entrepreneurship, you know, jumping out of the corporate world into entrepreneurship, senior leader in a large, huge corporate or, you know, company like DuPont, you know, I should be able to handle entrepreneurship. How hard can it be? But it's that pride of, well, I should be able to handle it. So I'm just going to continue to chase my tail because I can figure this out and not reach out for help because I should be able to have it figured out. So where is it that we can acknowledge where we are, where we can lean on somebody, where we're not quite getting it, whether it's mental health, whether it's tactical around learning strategies or how to do something. It's so interesting how we all just refuse to wave that white flag. I need some help here. Hang on, you know?
Totally. And I mean, and what I see it is, you know, I see it so much with executives, right? Like you, like corporate executives, high performers and entrepreneurs, right? Like, so there's this sort of, and athletes, which I work a ton with athletes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there's this sort of this belief that, you know, you got to be strong and you got to be, right? Like we have this pride about being strong and resourceful and perseverant. Like we work hard, we're going to figure it out, right? And it's like, and I love it. It's just like, and then I'm like chasing my tail. I'm like, oh my God, like how many people are doing this, right? And thinking like, no, I should be able to figure it out. It shouldn't be that hard. Like you know, and they're like wasting like so much time, so much money, you know, instead of being able to be like, yeah, fine, I'll invest. I'll have somebody show me the way, easy. Like, let's do this.
Right. Right. And I think part of that also is a lack of confidence.
For sure. For sure.
You know, if you're not sure about yourself and your capabilities, or we talked about core beliefs a little while ago around mine, where I don't matter, I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have those kinds of core beliefs, you're most likely not even aware of them. They're subconscious.
Yeah.
And you're literally holding on to these subconscious core beliefs, and you are actually making choices.
Right.
Align with those core beliefs, not even knowing it. So the choice is hanging on to fear because, oh my gosh, I just putting myself out there is going to be too scary. What if they don't like me? What if I look like an idiot? All this kind of stuff comes in, and it's that fear is a nasty little booger. Fear wants to just roof you. I have to say another word, but I can't remember if this is rated G or not.
Yeah, it's okay.
Fear is a real dynamo to deal with,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It gets in the way all the time, but I find that fear is so present, and it's present because of these core beliefs that are underneath that we don't even know we have. So it's so important to uncover all that stuff.
Well, I mean, and I love what you're talking about, both the core beliefs and the piece about, you know, what you talked about, shame, and the upside of that is pride, you know, because really what it is the ego, right? Like, these are the structures that our ego puts in place to help us feel, to erect kind of this false sense of confidence, right? That then all of a sudden all the core beliefs then form this nice little layer and box that is meant to keep us safe, right? Like, I mean, and that's really our ego's job, is to keep us safe. And so every time that we feel like we're doing something that feels scary, it's like, red flag, don't, you can't do that.
Right. Right, but then, so here's the philosophical question, right? Which ego are you talking about? Is the ego or the superego?
Mm-hmm.
So they're different. And
of course they are.
One ego is meant to protect you and be your survivor and to help keep you from getting into some dangerous or hurtful situation. But then there's the other ego that compensates for the lack of confidence, the
right.
Low self-esteem.
Uh-huh.
Right?
And ultimately, right, like they're all functioning, all beautifully in tandem, so that which I think is why it is so difficult to actually make any kind of shift and any kind of change and transformation, right? I think that that's part of the reason why we need to have that support and have somebody holding our hand in doing those kinds of things, because especially when you're doing something, it's like hard to see when it's like way up here, right? Like,
right.
So,
you can't see the forest through the trees.
No, you can't, you know. I mean, and even if you know it all, you know, I think that that's a really important piece. It's like that there's this difference between just knowledge and an application. And sometimes you just, like, even if you know the stuff, you need to have somebody, like, kind of guiding you to make the application, because it's a different perspective.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that goes back to, like, you know, there's this part of you that I know what I know.
Uh-huh.
There's a part of you that I know what I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the biggest part of you is I don't know. That's where the danger lies, right?
Yes.
But that's also where the transformation lies too.
Totally, totally. So then tell me a little bit about, tell me how, this is a question that I like to ask all of my guests. It's like, how did your intuition and your intuitive knowing factor into kind of the decisions that you make as you started making them?
You know, I think first and foremost, it is my part of taking charge of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really acknowledging where I was, acknowledging that I was not in a good place, and owning that. Because, you know, like I say, you can't change what you don't acknowledge.
Right.
So really acknowledging that, and then also having awareness around how is this impacting my life, and then tuning into my higher self, the part of me that really does know that I was here for a reason. I have a life of close calls.
Mm-hmm.
I have many times where I probably should have died and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And probably for another podcast, but several times where, you know, doctors are telling my parents, you better start making arrangements. And so I have a very strong sense of higher power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think connecting to that and then starting to do more digging around some of the things I was always curious about, and I had some gifted ability in, which is around energy and transformation and stuff, and really starting to own that and open up that world for myself. It really helped to change everything, but it really was fine tuning and getting in touch with who I really am and what I really want to do.
Yeah. And I love this. I know that you and I connected for your podcast, and now we're like, these little soul sisters that, like, you know, that I was saying, I'm kind of like a cat. Like, I have all these lives, and you're like, what? Me too.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But I think what I love, I mean, and is that even though, like, throughout your path, you were listening. And there were moments when you were listening and taking action, and there were moments when you were listening and not taking action, you know? So, I mean, the way that I hear, you know, some of the choices that you were made, like asking your boss was like, you know, you were listening and you were taking action, you know, like somehow along the lines, you felt like you needed to do this energetic work and energetic training. And so like, you didn't even know how it was going to fit in, but you were like, okay, yeah, this sounds interesting and I'm going to just do it. And you were listening, you know, and then it was kind of after you had your kids that you were like, all right, like, what's the rational thing to do?
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting, truth be told, in all transparency, when I decided to leave, you know, the company that I was with, it was dysfunctional, didn't get along, we just didn't jive. And I decided to leave that company. It was a decision of, I have had 24 years in the corporate world. I've climbed the corporate ladder. I'm an older mother. My kids are really young. I'm just going to be a stay-at-home mom. And the career, been there, done that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pay attention to my kids. Mm-hmm. And I am so appreciative and in such admiration of every stay-at-home mother, I have to say.
Oh, yeah.
But I realized that just was not for me. It just was not in my DNA. I'm like, I just really knew. And talk about gravitational pull.
Yeah.
I knew there was a tap on my shoulder. I was saying, you are meant for more. You were supposed to be doing something in addition to this. You can still be a great mother. Mm-hmm. But don't sell yourself short. There's more for you to be doing here. Mm-hmm. And to listen to that and go, okay, wait a minute, what's that going to be?
Right.
And then I had this therapy background. You know, I'm a therapist and I was a corporate leader. So what would make sense?
Right.
Do this leadership coaching and do it on a personal level in one regard, but also do it in a corporate level where I can help people focus on the inside part of being a good leader. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the tactical of how to negotiate a contract or how to, you know, create a motivated sales team. It's what can you do and what can you work on inside yourself that can then translate into you being a pretty kick butt leader for yourself and your family and for everybody around you.
Which I think it's, in my opinion, it's probably one of the most important parts of leadership, right? It's like, how can you be a good leader if you cannot model those things, right? Like, I mean, as a leader, I think that you are often modeling all the time, right? And so if you can't learn how to, you know, expand and grow and be a good person, then how can you translate into being a good leader?
Right. That is so true. Because it really is about leading from the inside out. And that's actually a good point, the distinction we may make too around my process and my pain and my path was, you know, I am a personal development junkie. Mm-hmm. If you go to my bookshelf, all you will see is motivational self-help books. I don't read fiction, never have.
Me neither.
My teacher told me I had to, right? Then, okay, look out, Huckleberry Finn, here I come.
Oh, that's too funny. I love it. You know, my husband's like, why are you always working? I'm like, what do you mean I'm working? I'm just reading. He's like, yeah, but you're reading stuff for work. And I'm like, no, this is the stuff I like to read. No, this is the fun stuff.
Exactly. And I love that stuff, right? But here's what I've learned through my process. And even, don't forget, I had my rock bottom moment while I was already a counselor.
Oh, yeah, right.
So we're not immune, right?
Oh, no, totally not.
Exactly. But here's the thing. I will tell you the distinction. Like, I had this big aha moment, seriously, not too long ago, about what made the difference. Is I was working on myself, not in myself. The yoga, fantastic. The meditation, fantastic. All that kind of stuff is helpful, mindful. It's all great.
Yeah.
But that's working on myself, not in myself. Mm-hmm. What's my core belief structure that's holding me back, that I'm aligning with every single day, that has got me stuck? What are the limiting beliefs that I have? What kind of pain points do I have? Where's this wounded little girl inside of me that says, oh, no, don't go there because that's not safe. The last time we did it, I got crushed. The last time we did something like this, I got hurt.
Right?
So that's the, I work in myself to identify, and that's what made the big shift. Mm-hmm. All that other stuff, working on yourself, perfect. I think it takes the edge off and it can make a shift, but it's not transformative.
Correct.
In a way than if you work on your in yourself.
I couldn't agree more. So I couldn't agree more. And in some ways you sort of weaved beautifully into kind of how you work with your clients, but maybe if you there's something else that you want to add to what you just said about the kind of work that you do with people. And
yeah, so through my own experience, I kind of wound up where I am today in the way I work with clients through my own process, my own path. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that I can literally say I've walked 100 miles in your shoes. I have been there. So it's just been a great path for me. I'll tell you, originally when I knew something was missing, I could feel this hole inside of me. I didn't feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I went to the traditional talk therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for years. And I literally can tell you, I can't count how many times I left the therapy session going, got out of that one. There was a part like I felt like, oh, good, I didn't have to go there with her today.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to break down and cry. I didn't. And I literally, not consciously, there was this, I organized around trying to get out of having to tell her my stuff, That's so, did I get anywhere? No. And then becoming a cornergetic therapist, with cornergetics, it works with your energy. So emotions are energy, thoughts are energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a human, we are walking around as one big ball of energy.
Yep.
We, because of our emotions, when your emotions are not fully processed and they're suppressed or repressed, as you know, they get stuck as energy blocks in our body. So we may have energy blocks, we may have energy leaks and all this kind of stuff. And so that's the premise of the core energetic model. It's psychotherapy, but it also incorporates the energy system of our body. And it incorporates the three kind of thing, mind, body, spirit. But the work is done through traditional psychotherapy aspects, but it incorporates breath work, movement, sound, and touch. So it's very powerful. And so when I shifted from a traditional talk therapist into a core energetic structure as a client, it completely changed me. Because even though I had resistance, like I would, it's all about expression,
right?
So if I'd come into a session angry, I'd have a big, huge styrofoam cube and a bat so that I could, because guess what? When we're angry, what do?
Yep.
You don't feel it because we've been taught to be a good boy, good girl. You know, don't act that way.
Yeah.
So it gave me permission to be fully expressive.
Mm.
And underneath all that, anger especially, underneath that kind of stuff is the pain.
Yeah.
So I accessed so much pain that I hadn't had before. So I started out as a cornergetic therapist. And then just this past year, I had taken an energy medicine class through Donna Eden, one of her practitioners. And it blew my mind. I learned how to work with energy in a completely different way so that now I can help people all over the world and they don't have to be in my office kicking my cube. And so now I pull all of those in together and it's just worked out exponentially. So now I can take clients through a transformational process and I can shortcut it. So it, what would have taken in traditional talk therapy years, I can do with months.
And it's incredibly powerful, and I love that you're talking about this. I know that it's been really transformative to like some of the work that I do, and it's sort of interesting because I know that there's like these processes where like, okay, well, we could do this and we can get through this in like a month or two, or we could do this thing where we just talk for like years and years, right? So, so I think that that's like incredibly, incredibly awesome and powerful. And I'm kind of curious, and just because, you know, being a psychologist myself, I know that there's like all of these sort of beliefs about like what is like the traditional way of practicing and not practicing, and I'm just kind of curious if any of that kind of stuff like showed up for you.
You mean, are you talking about like ethically as a
yeah,
therapy?
I mean, you know, yeah, ethics and just like, so like, I'll tell you a little bit, like when I became a coach and I was like sort of shifting, I was kind of thinking like, okay, well, like, can I do that? Like, you know, like I was so wrapped up in my, I was so wrapped up in my,
the boundaries, right?
You know, of, yeah, of being a psychologist, I was like, okay, well, like, I can't do this thing. And I, you know, and so I felt like I knew that I needed to do other things. But I didn't actually do it. I didn't actually started moving on those things for a couple years because I was like very afraid of like, okay, well, like that's like outside of the balance of what this blah, 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 you know? And so, I mean, for me, it was kind of recognizing like, okay, I can work as a coach and then this is what this is going to look like and I can start a new business and blah, blah, blah. But there was like all this stuff that I had to work through to kind of allow a lot of this energetic and spiritual work to flow through me. And so I was just kind of curious about whether any of that stuff came up for you.
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, it's really about, we're transforming along the way as well. Right?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Which is, I think it's beautiful, right? Like, and you transform and then you think like, oh my gosh, like I can't do this. And then all of a sudden it's like your client is telling you, like, it's like almost like begging you, you know? And then you're like, okay, well I'm gonna, and then they're like, oh my gosh, give me more of this. Right. And then you're like, oh, well, okay,
yeah.
I guess I better do
more. Because I think where I was, I had a, like, am I a psychotherapist?
Uh-huh.
Am I a core energetic practitioner or am I an energy healer?
Right.
And the reality is, I'm a liberating leadership coach. I transform my clients. That's blood. Pretty good. I transform my clients, right?
Right.
The end game is still the same. The goal
right.
is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Help people deal with what's ailing them.
Right.
Heal that inner child so they can be the most awesome, amazing people they can be.
Totally.
So the process is the same. Now, then I realized I'm all of that because, and I'm a leader.
Right, you are.
You can take the girl out of the corporate, but not the corporate out of the girl. You know, so I've got that kind of corporate edge to me,
uh-huh.
too. And I think that it's really about just the different tools that I have at my disposal now that allows me to bring the most value to my clients that I can possibly bring.
And it's also about you coming, I think, bringing your whole being,
mm-hmm.
which I think that that's really beautiful. You know, I know that that's really transformed just how I show up in any kind of sphere, but just realizing like, this is all of who I am, you know, like I am evolving and transforming and growing. And if I don't bring all of who I am to that interaction, then I am actually like not serving my clients at my highest and in their best interest.
Yeah, and you know what, though? That goes right back to a theme that we mentioned earlier, was selling yourself short.
Uh-huh, yeah, totally.
Because when you do that, when you sell yourself short and you're not living aligned with all of your greatness, then guess what? Here comes depression.
Totally.
It's knocking at your door because, you know, it just, because you wind up just thinking and it like, it's like quicksand, like psychological quicksand.
Totally.
And it's about embracing that mm-hmm. and doing it with pride. So to your point, I live in a small town,
mm-hmm.
you know, outside of Cleveland, and I'm doing this energy work. I haven't seen any evidence of anybody who does meditation, like that kind of stuff.
uh-huh.
I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to think I'm a freak and da-da-da. So what was that? Core belief. I'm
yeah.
not good enough.
Yep.
I don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
There's these judgments, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I kept myself quiet for a very long time. I'm doing all this virtually because out there they understand me, they won't get me here. But the reality is I'm getting certified. Today is like my last day to get finished on my certification. So I got a lot to do after this.
Wow.
But I have a lot of people that have come to me and they volunteered their time for me to do sessions with. I've had great success with them. And now people in the, you know, the town know. And I thought, you know what? The heck with it. Here I am. Right. And what I do either resonates with you and calls to you, or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But here I am.
Which I love, love, love. And I just kind of want to emphasize this so much, especially for some of the entrepreneurs that are out there listening, that we are fed and indoctrinated into so many different beliefs that end up blocking our ability to really show up as who we are, you know, and that the more that we just come back to us, right, the more that you let your freak flag, you know, like out there and be like, all right, like this is all of who I am. And, you know, I think that the more attractive you become for the right client, because then all of a sudden they are sensing that authenticity. And then they're being like, hey, that sounds interesting. Like, I want to know, right? And the people that are turned off, then they're going to be off. And then it's like, great. Like, give you my blessings. Like, don't clutter the space over here, you know? Like, let it open up for the people that really need to come and enter your sphere. So I think that's so beautiful.
Yeah, and to your point, you were in a place where you're resonating and you're vibrating at a whole different frequency when you're standing in that place than when you are selling yourself short, you know, enabling yourself and all this kind of stuff. You're vibrating at a totally different frequency, and people can feel it, even if it's subconscious, and they'll think, what the heck? You know, when you're out there and you're all in, like the all in, the full out thing, right?
Yeah, totally.
Like, people can feel it. It's the same thing when they say, oh my God, when that person gets, she just lights up the room when she walks in. Why? Right? It's an energetic vibration.
Totally, totally. And because you are really fully embodied, and I know that you and I can talk a whole bunch about that. So I know that we've gone a little, and I want to kind of remind people that are kind of listening, I want to give the phone number out just in case they want to call in. That's 646-716-7979. And I also want to kind of go back to some of the stuff that you were talking about in terms of there's all these myths, right, around like depression and why we're not able to like be really happy and experience joy. And I know that you're the expert at this. So kind of give me a little bit more about like what are some of those myths, and what is it that we need to, how do we need to start changing the way that we think about some of the stuff so that people are accessing support faster?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, because one of my passions, and I'm sure we've talked about it through our conversations, is I am so passionate about destigmatizing depression. It comes with such a bad rap. I mean, the stigma is it's very heavy-handed, and there's so much misinformation and misguidance out there that people like me won't admit when I'm depressed. Because, right, you just get labeled. It's like this rubber stamp is going to go on my forehead, and there you go. And so the myths, I really am very big about dispelling a lot of this. So first and foremost is that it's a disease. And it isn't. It's not a disease. There is no scientific evidence that says it is. They're treating it like an diabetes.
Right.
You can't treat this. You don't draw blood. And you don't count the blood cells and say, oh, yeah, you have this disease. It's not a disease. Depression means dis-ease. It means that something's off balance, it's your wake-up call, that something's not right. Heed that wake-up call and do something different. So it's not a disease. People need to understand that, because we're buying into that, because if we buy into that, it makes it really easy to go for the quick fix and the happy pill, doesn't it?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, and I always talk about people want magic wands and crystal balls, and, you know...
Right.
and it's like precisely the thing that doesn't actually exist, right? So
right, exactly. And you know, the other thing is that depression is controllable. It's not controllable. It is something that the more you try to control, the worse it gets.
Right.
So the old adage, what you resist persists, thing here. Because what we do is we try to control it through suppression. We try to not feel our feelings. We try to control it by distraction. We may avoid having our feelings and by watching TV or by drinking too much, and these kinds of things that only exacerbate it and make things worse. So it's really not controllable. We may also bully ourselves, right? We say, oh my gosh, snap out of it. And, you know, you idiot, you should be able to do this. Why can't you figure this out, kind of stuff? Oh my gosh. So we can't control it. You really can't. And if you don't do something about it, it gets worse. The other thing is that, and here's the big one, people assume that, oh my God, if you're suffering with depression, it means you can't function. And I have been making a depression test available to everybody for, gosh, a few years now. And I've been keeping real strong tabs with statistics. And I know from my own experience that, so 80% of people that take my test are either mildly depressed or moderately depressed.
Wow.
Very few of them are serious, severely depressed. Mm-hmm. But they felt depressed enough to come to me and take a test. And I know for me, I was moderately depressed. I had that one rock bottom moment, sure. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, I was dysthymic. I was just kind of on the low, numb feeling for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But I was high functioning. Like they try to say people with depression are laying in their bed with the blinds drawn and they're in their bathrobe and can't get up. And that's severe, severe depression.
Right.
30% of us are depressed and we're walking around taking our kids to their soccer games and running meetings and functioning on the outside.
And what I'm hearing from you is it's really like kind of that blah feeling of like they're going through the motions of life, but they're not really connected to that joyful, excited, energized feeling. So, you know, you wouldn't be able to say about them like, oh my gosh, they're lighting up the room when they come in, because they're not at that energetic level. Like they're just kind of flying under the radar.
Well said. That's exactly it. And you know you can put your happy face on. Like that commercial, that's probably the only depression. They show that
like with the, you know, the paddle.
That is probably the most accurate of these antidepressant commercials.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that. But it is really, you know, no one would know I was depressed. I was happy. I was cracking jokes. I had my mask on. Mm-hmm. And, so I was very high functioning. I still got promoted, all that kind of stuff. But it's really about how you feel on the inside. I felt detached. I felt numb. If you ask me when I laughed last time, I couldn't even tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But you just feel flat. You feel flatlined emotionally.
Right. So I'm going to say something that is, I know it's going to be controversial, and I'm kind of curious about, you know, your take on this. I really believe that every single ailment that happens in our body is actually a signal of something that is misaligned that we need to be paying attention to. So it's not necessarily this like, oh, it's this major thing. And sometimes a major thing that will need both medical and, but that it's really our bodies screaming for help, that something is really not aligned, not well inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of curious as to your
pick. I am 100% aligned with you.
Okay.
I'm not misaligned. No, I totally get it. And honestly, it's so easy to go to the disease, the medication, all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really, you're just putting toxins in your body. I mean, that's hard. But there's an energetic imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of imbalances there. And I think the energy piece of it is key. If we remember that we are all energy,
right?
And if we really can buy into that, and I'm sure you've seen the Kirlian photography where they take of hands and leaves and shafts of wheat, and you can actually see the energy print of a... You can see the energy around. It's there. We are energy.
Seen it.
And it's, oh my God, I'll
have to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And so energy imbalances is it. Emotions are energy, thoughts are energy. If you don't process emotions well and you have a really like intense emotion that you hold in and you don't express and you, right? What's going to happen? It winds up stuck.
Yep.
It winds up lodged in your body and it gets suppressed and repressed. We all know psychologists, right?
Right.
We know suppression and repression.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens, but that's energy.
Mm-hmm.
That energy creates problems because it's like it short circuits our full energy system. So you don't go light up a room. It's like having all the breakers on, right? And then a breaker tripped.
Right.
Now part of the room isn't lit anymore.
Right. Right.
Same thing with this energy. So yeah, I believe in the training I've gotten in this last year is that, you know, emotional imbalances and the trapped energy there is 93% of our issues right now. It doesn't, now releasing all that doesn't cure true disease.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, or fractures and all injuries, all this kind of stuff. But there's energy around it that can be resolved.
Absolutely.
It can totally change your life just by working with the energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what are some, we have about 10-ish minutes. So what are some of the most important things that maybe you would want to tell us about what are good steps for people to take when they're noticing some of this stuff?
You know, there's all kinds of books you can go read about, you know, and I consider depression, stress, anxiety, calm, all in the same bucket. They're really just different names for a lot of things.
Say this again. You consider depression and what?
Depression, stress, and anxiety.
Okay.
All in the same, you know, okay. they're playing in the same playground,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, if you want to overcome that stuff, if you know something in your heart isn't right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all feel, we know it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whether you're willing to pay attention to it, it matters.
Right.
And I think for me, the process, you can look at a book and you can see 7 steps to your journey to joy or these kinds of things. I am a little, you know me, I'm edgy and sassy, right? So my thing is,
that's why we got along so well.
Exactly. That's why, you know, my 2 signature talks are mastering your shift
uh-huh.
and kicking some glass.
I love that.
Right? But yeah, it's all this edgy stuff. So it's a 4-step process. It's mm-hmm. get real, reveal, deal, and heal. You know, because
I
you have
that.
To really, it's about acknowledging. I think part of it is, we talk about pride, we talk about shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I will honestly say, I think from my own experience and what I've seen with my clients is, if you aren't willing to get real with yourself
mm-hmm.
and own up that something's not right,
mm-hmm.
and then go on an expedition to figure out what that is, you're just going to be like you are. If you're unhappy, you've got to reveal and acknowledge that you're unhappy and then figure out why.
So repeat those 4 steps again, because I'm sure it was get real,
reveal,
deal,
and heal.
Okay. Fantastic. I just wanted to, because you said them like very smoothly, and I'm like, okay, I think people are going to be like, whoa, get real, reveal, deal, and heal. For
yeah.
sure. For sure. And you also have, I know that you gave me this and I want to give it because it sounds like it's a good time now. You have created this 9 strategies to create a joyful life. And I think that probably, you know, share some of your process. And so if you want to get the 9 strategies to a joyful life from Dana, you would go to sourceyourjoy.com. And is that your website, Dana?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sourceyourjoy.com. Great. So you will get to know more about Dana there. And you also will be able to download the 9 strategies to live a joyful life. I believe that you also have a depression screen or something like that. And is that also in your website?
Yep. Yeah, if you go to sourceyourjoy.com/depression-test,
okay.
you can take my test and you'll get immediate results.
Great, because I think that's also another fantastic resource that you have.
That's part of the get real, right?
Uh-huh.
Understand where you are.
So I'm kind of curious because, in my experience in, you know, it's funny because I've worked with all kinds of people and as much as I'd like to say, you know, we talk about like, talk to the specific people and the niche and all this stuff. There's some things that are true about all of us as human beings that show up for everybody, whether they're about to like call somebody like you to get like to get help for depression, or they might be, you know, calling somebody like me to get help with their business or joining a mastermind. Like it feels like there is this kind of what we're talking about, this ego and the fear that comes up, that is a lot more about the time and the money excuses. And it's really about the holy shit, I'm gonna actually have to like do work, and I'm actually going to have to look at stuff and embark in this transformation, and I'm not sure that I am ready to do that.
Well, you know what, though? I think that it's really about how bad do you want it, because one thing I always tell people is that if you aren't willing to make the change, and you know you're miserable, but you're still not willing to take the steps to make a change, there's a secondary benefit you're getting.
Absolutely.
You're getting something from it that's serving you. Either being depressed is causing people to dote on you and care for you more than they did before and give you more attention because they want to make sure you're okay. There's always this little hook, right?
Totally.
If that goes to the get real part again,
mm-hmm.
too. If you know, if you want to make that change, if something's stopping you, what's that hook? That's
mm-hmm.
part of the get real process.
Yes. Uh-huh.
What's that hook that's keeping you there?
Mm-hmm.
And then once you identify that and you realize, okay, what's the trade-off? Just all this doting and attention, or going out and living my kick-ass life and I'm just conquering the world, Which one do you want to choose?
I love that. I mean, and I wanted to ask you this because I think that probably that get real piece, it seems like, oh, that'd be not a big deal, right? But it seems like that's actually like one of the biggest hurdles that people need to get through is that get real piece of like being willing to look and really look.
Totally. Well, because of the shame, because of the pride and ego, and because of fear. Those three don't play well together.
Or they play really well together.
Yeah. Yeah, like Bonnie and Clyde, right? It's a sidekick. But yeah, it's a, you know, really it is about the transformation. And it is, you know, change is scary. Any change is scary.
Yeah.
And you always say that the change can be very positive, but it doesn't, and it can be really, it can be challenging, but it doesn't mean it's not the right decision.
Right, right. I totally agree. Totally agree. So, I mean, in the next few minutes, I don't see anybody that has called that's on the line or anything like that. So we have, I don't know, like about 3 minutes or something like that. Are there things that you would want to leave us with, or do you want to make sure that people know?
Yeah, I think really just my whole thing is about just be loving and kind to yourself. We judge ourselves and hold ourselves to such a high standard of, you know, and it gives up his core beliefs. Like, if I'm not perfect, they won't love me. If I'm not, oh my God, just be human, you know, and take it easy on yourself, because we are meant to have all these beautiful emotions. And I wouldn't even say bad emotions, because I don't believe there are bad emotions. They're all just emotions, right? Mm-hmm. We're human.
Yeah.
And we're all about finding love and finding connection, not only to other people, connection deeply to ourselves and connection to a higher power. Mm-hmm. If you focus on just those three things, on really being committed to having those kinds of connections, and then having faith that they're going to happen and that you will be served, everything else falls into place.
I couldn't agree more.
You don't need to try so hard. If you just relax, and we talked about waving the white flag and finding support. It's also about knowing you're a co-creator in this world.
Totally.
You're co-creating every single day, you know, and we're in good hands.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. I was posting something. You said two things that I posted on my Facebook feed yesterday. One was about just encouraging people just to be kind and loving, because I think that the any kind of change that we want to see in our world starts with us, you know, and it's like, how can we want or expect anybody else to be kind or empathic or compassionate if we can't lend that to ourselves first, right? And then the other one is just kind of the piece of like, it's interesting and fascinating how when you trust, like things just kind of fall together, you know, like the right people come into your life at the right time. And, you know, like I was thinking, I need to really focus on my book. And then the publisher called me like 2 minutes later, I swear. And I was like, okay, well, clear message received. Got it.
Exactly. You've got to be listening.
Yes. Well, which I think is so important. And I feel like that's part of the reason why I always ask about intuition, because I think it's a superpower that we all have. And we don't always access, we don't always listen, we don't always trust it. And so the more that people get to hear about other people like accessing it and trusting it and how that's shown up in your life, then that would be, you know, that's just really, really beautiful. So I love, love, love what you've shared. And we're getting the reminder. So I want to give your website again, sourceyourjoy.com is where you can find more information about Dana. You will get to have the 9 strategies to live a joyful life. And then you can also access her depression screen. I know that you and I could probably talk for like a really long time.
We say that every time we talk.
But I am I'm so grateful for you willing to share your story, your vulnerability, and your expertise with all of us.
Oh, well, thank you. I knew it would be a blast, and I'm very, very grateful for the platform to be able to be here with you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dana. And please reach out to Dana at sourceyourjoy.com. And then if you want to get a copy of our video recording, you can access that at intuitivebusinessmastery.com. So until next time, defy the ordinary, become extraordinary. This is Dr. Elena Espinel signing up, and we will see you soon.
Radio.
At Carl's Jr., we are pioneers of the great American burger. We're all about breaking down barriers, pushing boundaries, and freedom to eat breakfast however you want. Like on a burger. That's why we're liberating eggs, bacon, and hash rounds from the confines of the breakfast table and pioneering a burger with breakfast on top that's available all day long. You know what that tastes like? Freedom and breakfast and burgers. The Breakfast Burger at Carl's Jr. for a limited time only at participating restaurants.